As the Obama family prepares to leave the White House after 8 years, our next guest asked 16 writers to share what First Lady Michelle Obama means to them. Michelle, as she's simply known by her admirers, has been an unusually popular First Lady and one who made her mark in the arenas of children's health, political speeches, fashion, and more. And our next guest says the first African-American First Lady did things on her own terms.
But I think it's all an evolutionary process. You grow into this role, and my sense is that you never get comfortable if you're always pushing for change and growth, not just in yourself, but in the issues that you care about. You're never done, so there's never a point in time where you feel like, there, I am now here, and I can do this the same way all the time. It's always changing.
Michelle Obama talking about her role as First Lady. Veronica Chambers joins us now. She's a writer and former senior editor at the New York Times Magazine and the editor of the book, The Meaning of Michelle, 16 Writers on the Iconic First Lady and How Her Journey Inspires Our Own. Veronica, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, when did you realize that Michelle Obama was going to be someone who was special to you and also to a lot of other people?
Well, I think I've been a Michelle fan since the very first campaign. And about a year ago, my editor and I, we were out to lunch, and she said, don't you want to do a book? And I thought, well, if we're going to do a book that's going to happen in a year, we have to do it fast. And we did. And it was really great to be able to pull together this tribute to this really iconic First Lady.
Well, a thread running through this book of essays, people said they kind of felt like they knew Michelle Obama. Some writers called her Shell, you know, even yeah. Shortening from the first name to just Shell. Why do you think that is, that feeling of intimacy with someone?
Well, you know, I think that she has been, for someone who was hesitant to take the role, she has been someone who has really embraced it and in turn embraced the people who've come into contact with her. I mean, I've never met her personally, but, you know, you read a lot about her hugs. And several of the writers, Philippa Sue, Alicia Hall Moran, Marcus Samuelson, have met her. And they say, you know, when she hugs you, it's not a fake hug. It is a real embrace. There's a real feeling that there's nobody else in the room but you, and this moment is happening in a really personal way. And I think somehow that's been communicated to our whole country.
And one of the essayists said that she actually cried when she read a piece about Michelle Obama's, I think it was, inauguration dress in the New York Times. And her husband said, well, why are you crying? And she said, because she's like me. Can you tell us a little more about Michelle Obama's background?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, we know from the president's farewell speech, he reminded us she's a girl from the South Side. She had working class parents. Her dad had a disability, and yet he worked every day of his life so that he could pay for her to go to school. And so, you know, she came from a humble background, and yet she excelled at Princeton. She went to Harvard Law School. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, I think despite the polarity of, you know, the past campaign cycle, she really does represent the American dream. And I think that the fans of her really recognize that in her. Someone humble who made it really, really far based on hard work and a lot of family love.
And it sounds like that really spoke to a lot of people, this feeling that in a way that they could have been her, that maybe their children could be her, someone who works hard and ends up in the White House.
I mean, I feel like as a mother of a young daughter, I could not have, like, you know, like those, if you think about the Disney princesses and the fairy godmothers, I mean, I feel like Michelle Obama has been like a fairy godmother to my daughter. Because for a girl like my daughter who has brown skin, and the fact that the only First Lady she knows is Michelle Obama is incredible. My daughter literally feels like she's like a real-life superhero, as well she should.
And in the book, we hear about how Michelle Obama took her first tour of the White House, and she chose to wear a red dress, and that was a bold choice. I mean, what did that striking fashion sense of hers mean to African-American women, especially?
I think that there's been a great moment with Michelle Obama's fashion. There's two things that I think are constantly happening, is that I think she really goes for the broadest possible reach. You know, wearing a red dress when you're from a blue party is saying, I am here to represent all people, and I'm reaching across the aisle, even sartorially, at least it did to me. But I also think it means one of the things is that it's been a long, long, long time since we've had a candidate and a president who's gone through 8 years without any hint of scandal, without any sort of misstep. And so it also, the bold fashion choices said, I take this role really seriously. And I'm going to, you know, one of the essays called it dressing like you mean it. And so there's a sense that I'm not going to be sloppy, and it extends to the fashion.
Do you think that we talk too much about the fashion choices of first ladies? I mean, there was Michelle Obama's fashion sense. There's a lot of focus on her arms and how toned they were, and people, that was a thing for a long time. Do you think it detracts at all from the work that a first lady does?
I do. I think that the whole campaign of ask her something else besides what she's wearing that's been happening on red carpets is important, because we don't ask men what they wear. And, you know, President Obama talked about the fact that he basically had a uniform and he wore very similar things so that he didn't have to think about it. I think what Michelle Obama did, which was so interesting, is that she really, because she knew people would be watching what she wore young designers, she wore designers of really different backgrounds, and that was a big boon. There was a study by NYU Business School that showed that her influence on brands, if she wore a brand consistently, it was worth $38 million to that brand. So brands like J. Crew actually enjoyed an economic boost, which is really different than, you know, if someone sees Jennifer Lawrence or Beyonce wearing something, they don't necessarily go online and get it. But if the first lady wore a really pretty chiste dress to a president's address, it might sell out before the time he finished speaking. Mm. So there was a sense that she was a role model as a career woman, as someone who was, you know, a woman of a certain age, and her clothes she chose were really wearable.
We're talking with Veronica Chambers right now as the Obama family prepares to leave the White House. We're talking about her book. It's called The Meaning of Michelle, 16 Writers on the Iconic First Lady and How Her Journey Inspires Our Own. And Veronica, you talk about different ways of perceiving the strength of Michelle Obama. A lot of the essayists in the book focus on that. I mean, there are her arms as sort of a metaphor, but there's also her relationship with Barack Obama and her voice as someone who spoke up about various issues that she cared about, including the Bring Back Our Girls campaign that she was part of. How would you describe her strength?
I think that the power of her strength was that, first of all, she wielded it very carefully. You know, she took her time, and she started, what I love about what she did is she literally started in the ground with the garden, you know, the first White House garden since the days of Eleanor Roosevelt. So you get the sense that this whole idea of planting and a harvest was a very powerful metaphor, because I think as she went on step by step, she took on more and took bolder moves and initiatives, but she didn't just kind of jump into everything, which is, in this age of social media, it can be easy to retweet everything, to post everything, to say, I'm for this, I believe in this, support this too. She really grew along the way. The clip that you played was so brilliant because she talked about it changes every day, but she also changed and grew in the role.
Do you think that she succeeded in reaching people who may not have been Democrats? Did she have that kind of sort of bipartisan appeal?
I think that she did. You know, it's been interesting for me. I one of the people that ended up reaching out to me was someone who I went to college with, who is a very conservative columnist. And he said to me, you know, we didn't talk much at college. And he goes, I'm going to talk about her detractors, because at the end of the day, the fact is even the president-elect, if you look at him, he hasn't really criticized her. And I think that's huge. He's criticized basically everybody. And I think that people believe she comes from a good place and that she's not taking hits against them. And so there's been very, very few hits against her, which is pretty amazing.
There's also an area in the book where it's discussed about her choice, calling herself first mom, not, you know, other options that she could have had that had more reference to her, her law degree from Harvard, or, you know, something else about her Ivy League education. But first mom, what did that choice mean?
You know, it's interesting because I think that for some people, the idea of calling yourself first mom or mom in chief was a betrayal. But I think that she was saying, my first job in this is to really get my family settled and to figure out how we keep working and growing. Because I think that she knew from the moment they entered the White House, there would be a day when they would leave the White House. And what she wanted was for her kids to be strong and confident. She wanted her marriage to be secure and stronger than ever before. And I think that she was signaling, that is my priority. And the fact is that that's the foundation upon which most of our lives are built. You know, there was a study that showed that people, the president called her in his farewell address, his best friend. And people who feel like they are married to their best friends are not only healthier and do better economically, but are happier. And so I think she was saying, I'm putting my happiness first above everything else. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
Now, it sounds like she may still be an influential figure when she leaves the White House, too. There are people out there who hope she's going to get into politics, that she could be a leader in that respect, too. What do you hope that she does in her new life post-White House?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, there was a hashtag Michelle 2020, and that was a pretty exciting hashtag if you're a fan of hers. But she has said again and again that she does not want to run for office. That said, I do think that she has proven herself to be a really dedicated public servant. You know, the Let Girls Learn initiative that she started with the Peace Corps, it has been, I think, amazing. The fact that 62 million girls around the world who are school age, my daughter's age and slightly older, who should be in school aren't. They work in factories or they're in child marriages. And she's really looking at that kind of global effect of how can we just do the basics of getting girls in school and letting them get the education that they need and deserve, and how will the world be shaped by that? And I think that's pretty powerful.
Veronica, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great. Really nice talking to you.
That was Veronica Chambers, writer and former senior editor at the New York Times Magazine, and she's the editor of the new book, The Meaning of Michelle, 16 Writers on the Iconic First Lady and How Her Journey Inspires Our Own.